ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's the Star Wars Report. It's been a while since I played the old Clone Wars soundtrack. Hey, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Please delete as appropriate. I'm your host for this very special episode. I'm Riley Blanton. Hey, is this our own bonus content? I kind of think so. Hey, let's welcome back to the program my good friend, Mr. Mark Holtman. How are you doing, Mark?
Hey, me and Whistler are doing good. Hey. Sitting over here just chilling, waiting to talk about some Star Wars bonus content.
Can't go wrong with that. Our bonus content about the bonus content. This episode is actually exclusively going to be released to our awesome mailing list subscribers. So you guys who are tuning in, we do appreciate it. And thank you guys for being the super awesome VIP folks that you are. This is why you signed up. So Mark, we can't make this crappy, right? It's got to be good stuff. It's got to be true professional Star Wars podcasting.
Top notch, sir.
But hey, this is going to be kind of an interesting, you know, I'm feeling kind of mellow, feeling in the mood to talk some wars. But, you know, you'll notice, like, it's not the typical. Usually I'm all like, hey, everybody, welcome back to the Star Wars War Podcast. But I'm just, you know, I'm not podcast right now.
Maybe I got to be honest here, okay?
All right.
I've been hanging out with the Pike Syndicate, and I got into Spice, and I got Evil Bethany hooked on the Spice, and she's been slipping it into your tea.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
That's probably why you're feeling a little mellow right now.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, go grab a mirror, look at your eyes; they're kind of glowing a little bit. Like,
hey, we do. We are true. You know, never mind. I don't have a good response to that. I was going to have some sort of comeback. Like, no, on second thought, no. I'm just going to leave that right there. And traverse my way on. No, what we're going to be talking about primarily is our bonus content about the bonus content. We're talking about Clone Wars, The Lost Missions. I've mentioned it before, but it bears mentioning again. We do have a fine podcast starting up here on the Star Wars Report Network. And it's the old crew from Republic Forces Radio Network. They're putting together the Star Wars Report's Rebels Roundtable. So that's going to be an exciting time. And I think they're going to, I was talking to Nathan the other day, they're planning on kind of getting out episodes at a time. Those introductory episodes will be out soon. And of course, they will be doing episodes on the bonus content, aka Lost Missions, kind of leading as a teaser while we're waiting for Star Wars Rebels to formally come out so that they can start their podcast about that series. So there you have it. But of course, I can't stand not talking about it because it's too good. I needed an outlet, some kind of excuse to talk about this stuff. And so here I am. Here we be. Let me ask you, Mark. Mm-hmm. When I've already talked on the regular podcast, I talked with Pete Morrison about the Order 66 arc, but I haven't heard your thoughts just overall of this whole season now that you were able to binge watch it. What was the process? How did you watch it? Was it a straight 6-hour slog, you know, getting through the whole shebang all at once, or did you kind of piece me a little bit? How did you first expose yourself to this fine stuff?
It was 12:25 a.m. and I was freaking out because for 25 minutes I could not get it to show up on my Netflix. Didn't matter what Netflix I was checking out. And then, you know, someone sent me a link, and I went to that link on the computer, not on my TV, my Sony TV. And I went through the computer, and boop, lo and behold, it was there. Once I played it on that one, I saved it to my list, and then it was on all of them, and then it was game on. I tried staying up all night. I watched the first 4 episodes, and I was just riveted. I could not go to sleep. Then after that, I was looking at what the topics were, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to jump right to Yoda, you know, and I jumped to Voices, actually. I skipped right past the Lost one and went straight to Voices and started watching that. And again, like, I was kind of falling asleep off and on. And then I woke up, it was near the end of it because the whole, you know, spoiler warning, Darth Bane action came out, and I was like, what the heck is going on? And so I was going to watch it again, and then I jumped back to the point where the clones were, and I started the whole season over again and fell asleep again. And so, you know, the next day I woke up, I made my son watch the arc with the, you know, Fives, because me and him are big clone fanatics. And so we watched that, and I was trying to get him prepared for what was coming because, you know, we love Fives. Mm. You know, and finding out that Echo still lives from Dave Filoni was awesome. I mean, I'm one to dish on Filoni for saying, you know, Lucas had Jango not be Mandalorian. But in this regard, I'm going to take what Filoni says. And yeah, you know, Echo lives. Long live Domino Squad. Because I was really bummed in that regard. I mean, the way that story, you know, led up to the event of Fives, you know, being shot down, I was trying to tell my son the same thing. I'm like, you know, it's already done. His fate sealed. The moment he went with Tup, it was on. I mean, there was no getting around it.
Yeah. That was, I mean, I talked about it on the show, but yeah, it was a tragedy, but one that, it was one of those things where there was glorious tension, even though you knew once, you know, once things went down that this didn't end, this isn't going to end well for Fives.
Yeah. And I mean, even with what I know of the EU and stuff, adding the techno organic chip in their head that acted like a tumor and stuff, you know, it was a weird spin on things, but I think it adds to, you know, everything that was already there. I mean, that's just one more complex factor in the equations that we've been given. I mean, we were told originally it was just programming in the sense of, sir, yes, sir, you know, I mean, after being bred into you from birth kind of programming. But if you have that in conjunction with this, these trigger mechanisms that are supposed to work, I mean, I was very curious as to how his was triggered. I mean, aside from his just happened to be a faulty chip, which made me wonder, like, how are theirs going to be triggered when it happens? I mean, is it just the word phrase and that causes the tumor to just go nuts? I mean, you know, there's that whole aspect of it that wasn't done. And so I went from that one, me and him, we watched that. And then again, we jumped to the Lost Ones, and I watched that one next. And that's my shining example of that season. You know, you always have like an arc each season that's your favorite. And while I love the Fives arc for everything it has, the Lost One, that just brought so much stuff that I've been wanting to see come back and be answered. You know, I've always tongue in cheek laughed about the fact that the Jedi never figured out that Tyrannus was Dooku. And I mean, that's the heart of the whole episode, that and what happened to Sifo-Dyas. And I mean, these things were mentioned and stuff in books, and they kept true to, you know, I mean, for the most part, the way it falls down could still have been what they were referring in the books. I mean, there's Secrets of the Jedi and another one that I've got the duology where it's the two together. It's Secrets of the Jedi and it's like Fate of the Jedi, but it's something along those lines. But or Legacy of the Force, or it's Legacy of the Jedi. But I got a duology with it, and one of them deals with Dooku, and that one, it kind of goes into that. And then Plagueis kind of touched on it a little bit as well, but they didn't go into too much. I mean, it was just more like Plagueis was watching this guy. They were also watching Sifo-Dyas. So I just thought that the way they tied that stuff all together was just epic. And I loved – I mean – I'd only seen the Clone Wars like on like downloads and stuff that were, you know, kind of really junky, you know. So this is the first time seeing it what feels like HD quality. I mean, I got HD cables and all that, and I was watching, you know, when Wolfpack's coming out of the sand and stuff, and they find Sifo-Dyas' ship, and Bo Klun's got the different little masks on his face, and he's got the little head wrap, and when he lifts the lightsaber up, all the sand falling off of it. I mean, the detail and the way that the troopers' armor were painted and stuff, it was incredible. I mean, and that's just the looks of it was just stunning and mind-blowing, you know? And then on top of it all, it's the plots that were going down. I mean, then when I finally did get to the Clovis one, it was like, holy, you know, talk about Force Unleashed, you know, and you were waiting for Anakin to kick his butt, you know. I don't know. There was a part of me, I was asking the Beyonders and stuff, you know, am I wrong to think that Padme's kind of acting like an SLU? Yeah, because she's kind of, you know, it seemed like she was really putting herself out there and putting herself in a very bad location that a married woman shouldn't be doing. Like, well, she's playing that, well, I'm to all intents and purposes, I'm single, so I'm playing that up. Like, it seemed like she was taking too much joy in it. And so I was like, am I wrong, or is this just because I'm a guy? And I don't know. But when Annika came in, I was like, oh, man, it's on, you know? And when we had that moment at the end where they're doing the whole two-hand thing, I questioned some of that. I mean, there's some aspects of the last half of the season that I'm scratching my head going, wow, I got to watch this again. But unlike when I watched Mortis, you know, I was only able to watch it like one or two times because I was catching it on the TV and on the internet when it played for one or two days afterwards. And, you know, once it was gone, I couldn't watch them again, you know. And at the time, I was working a lot during those weeks, so I really only had one day to get to watch them. And then if I didn't get it in on like a few hours of staying up late time, then I only got to see those episodes one time. So Mortis, like, that was mind-blowing. I never figured out what the heck happened in that, and it just kept going. But at least with these now, I can go back and I can watch it over and over again and sit there, scratch my head going, wait, so that means, wait, the cosmic force is equal with the living force, and one of those are the unifying force, or maybe both of those are the unifying. Ooh, what could that, you know? I don't know. There were so many concepts and stuff that came forward in this that I never thought Lucas would go with, you know, especially when we're talking the Yoda arc. I mean, yeah. The whole aspect of the living force and you know, those emotional spirits, whatever they were. I mean, and it makes me go, are they Wills? You know, I mean, did they all but call them Wills? I mean, they should have called them Wills. That would have been epic because we know that Qui-Gon Jinn learned his ability from the Wills. And so now we know that these people are who trained him or got him on that way. So it's like, okay, so they're Wills. Like,
If I could just interject real quick, I was thinking about it, especially, and I feel kind of bad because I'm removed from the details of it, so I kind of have to speak in generalities because I've only seen it once and it's been several weeks. Like, when I watched it, I did a very similar order, started with the Order 66 arc, and I just kind of watched it around homework assignments. So basically, I would catch up on homework, and then, you know, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days later, I was have a chance to sit down and watch an arc. And then I would be really busy with classwork and homework, and then I would be able to do it. So it's like about a 2 week.
But you process. Were able to watch the arcs in their entirety, or was it like you'd watch one episode, then a couple days, another one?
Yeah, we'd watch the Order 66 arc. I want to say the weekend it came out, or the weekend after. It was on the weekend, so maybe in the weekend after, just because I was so busy. But then we watched the Yoda arc, and it's just then we went back, and it was the Clovis arc, and then finally. We watched the, I guess, Jar Jar arc, the Mace Windu arc, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, that was a good one, too. And I was surprised. I mean, I, you know, Bethany was asking me on last week's or 2 weeks ago's episode about how, you know, what I thought my most annoying character was, and it was always been Jar Jar, but it was kind of funny to see Mac Daddy Binks. I mean, I was not expecting that.
Master and Mace. Yeah, that was probably my least favorite arc of the arc, but that wasn't exactly a surprise. And it was still, that's saying something because it was still really good, I thought. But yeah, with the biggest one for me was definitely the Yoda arc. Because you get to see, like, it's essentially like Yoda's trials, right? I mean, essentially, what Yoda went through is kind of what I always imagined a Jedi's trial would be, right? Not some podunk, Ahsoka, we retroactively call that your trial, no. Like, this was real stuff. And especially, probably the most compelling part that jumped out to me, so let's talk about it, was, I can't remember the episode title names, but it was the one where Yoda confronts his evil alter ego.
Oh,
that he wasn't.
Yeah.
The Gollum of Yoda, where he...
Dude, when I saw that, I wanted just him to say, give me my rose, because that would have been perfect. There was, it was... Dark Rendezvous, set in the Clone Wars, when they had that whole timeline of books and they were doing it all. And Dooku reaches out to Yoda and he tells Yoda, you know, you should join me. You know, I'm trying to do this for the galaxy. I want to do what's right. You know, he's trying to sell him this whole thing. And then in that moment, Dooku has a vision from the Force and he sees Yoda in all his dark glory. And because the whole conversation came over a rose, because Yoda was like, well, if you're, you know, your dark side's so awesome and powerful, give me a rose. Give me a rose right now. And Dooku's like, that, don't be silly. You know, we can't trivialize the fork. He's like, no, give me my rose. And then when he had that vision, Yoda was like, give me my rose. And he realized, you know, the worst thing the galaxy could have would be a dark Yoda. And it was, if they would have just slipped that in, I would have peed my pants.
Well, and I remember there was concept art that floated around for a while from one of the studios that was working on Battlefront 3 of a dark side, old Ben Obi-Wan, right? And that was, I always found that really compelling to see, like, the characters that we most associate with ultimate good facing their own inner demons. Because, let's face it, to see Anakin face, you know, Anakin fighting his demons in the Mortis trilogy and the vision where Darth Vader shows up briefly, you know, that's compelling, but we've already seen it and it's predictable. We know Anakin's dark side. I would argue that we've even seen... We see Luke Skywalker's dark side in Empire Strikes Back. We see a lot of the characters go through their own dark moments, but then there are these kind of venerable, old-school Star Wars, you know, pillars of the Star Wars mythology, like Obi-Wan, like Yoda, where to see them conquer their own demons, that was really compelling. And to see how... you're right, I kind of want to call them the Wills, but what were they called in the episode, this... you know, the Shakespeare masks.
They were like guides of some sort.
Yeah, but where they essentially expose Yoda to what he's not been willing to admit and an inner evil that he's kept at bay. Man, that was amazing. Like, I don't really know.
Well, and then there's the aspect, you know, people were wondering, like, so how did Obi-Wan, you know, pass the test? Like, you know, did it go where, but I mean, because I kind of got the impression that at first Qui-Gon's like, you have to pass this test before I can do anything.
Yeah, you know, kind
of
yeah.
like, but he didn't say that way. He was like, you got to go to these people. They're the ones that will get you on the ball. And then they make him do all the tests. And when they're done, they're like, okay, now he can train you. I mean, that was kind of what I gathered out of it, because we'd always seen that Qui-Gon came to Yoda and that he had told, you know, Yoda about it. And then Yoda tells Obi-Wan, I'm going to teach you how to try to commune with him. And then in the books, Obi-Wan's trying for a long time before it ever works. I mean, he's just trying. And he's just talking in his head or talking out loud going, oh boy, I hope this works, you know. And then finally Qui-Gon contacts him. It's just one of those things that, like, oh, okay, now how's that going to fit in? You know, I love those mysteries, even though sometimes they can be annoying, because, you know, sometimes aspects of things that I see in the larger picture don't always get, you know, the same recognition. So it's kind of harder when that happens. But in this case, it worked. I mean, the Bane image, when they show Bane later, you know, he had this like, Rakgul or Ragnarok, or what was it? The Durok from Lord of the Rings that... When, you know, dude, you can't pass, you shall not pass, when Gandalf did that. Bane had a look like that, where his skin, the Balrog, where his skin was crackling and on fire and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, had a very
But he didn't look like
style.
the leaked footage where they had scenes of Bane and Revan going to show up, you know, and they cut those. But those models were more accurate to what we had in the EU. But at first I questioned that, but then someone had pointed out, you know, well, this could be his burial, you know, his ceremonial burial armor. I was like, oh, you know, I can roll with that. Or this could be the armor he decided to wear after he fried off the suit that, you know, he was wearing at that time. I mean, both of those would be equally acceptable. And then there's also the angle that it was all just an illusion and they weren't Sith spirits at all. You know, and that's another one where this gets my mind rolling, because it could be either or. I mean, you could take Yoda at his face value that it was just an illusion, or you could see it as, you know, the Darksiders do the same thing. I mean, they still exist within the Force, but they found a way to be selfish about it, but they can only be near, you know, their physical remains, or, you know, in these certain nexuses where they can, you know, come out. But the reality is if you know that they really have no power over you, they don't have power over you. But if you don't know that, then they do. You know, I mean, there's so many things you could go with that. And I love the fact that they left it that open.
Well, and I mean, we are kind of jumping to the end, but that was very compelling. I do want to jump back real quick, though, to the Lost One, where that moment where Plo Koon picks up the lightsaber of Sifo Dyas, and that you get that sense of Star Wars mythology that we don't know yet. Because Sifo Dyas, especially, like, to me anyway, he's a very unknown... It's kind of like the Order 66 thing. You only have your own explanation for how Order 66 went down, and now we have a better, vision straight from George. And it was interesting to see Plo make that discovery, and the Jedi Council, like, wait a second. And then I love how Yoda goes to Palpatine, and Palpatine's all like, never heard of this Sifo Dyas guy. Don't know what you're talking about.
How long ago was it, you say? Yeah. Oh, before my time. I was just a humble ambassador.
Senator. Like, where he just somehow Master Sifo Dyas just disappeared, and, you know, I don't know. That was definitely, I think, one of the more compelling parts of that episode. But the meat, really, I think, did come into the last three episodes, which I'm going to cheat real quick and pull up the official
Well, while you're doing that, I want to touch on the Lost Ones, where you were at.
Yeah.
You know, when they go to the Pike Syndicate, and the Pike Syndicate Overlord dude gives away that Tyrannus is Dooku, the way that goes down is perfect, because the guy that was with Sifo Dyas that knew, you know, that another Jedi or somebody showed up to wipe him out, wanted to become him, and then Dooku shows up and chokes him, and Anakin makes the comment of, you know, you finally showed up to do your own dirty work, and Dooku's like, some things need to be done in person or something like that. Oh, man, and he unites his blade. I'm like, okay, that was incriminating enough. And then they go out, and I mean, I'm already freaking out, like, oh, my gosh, you're going to figure it out. And meanwhile, there's a part of me that's mocking this scene, going, my powers have more than doubled since last time we've met. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, so we have one more in here. So it literally was probably days or weeks before, you know, I mean, so there's that part of me. But when they get out there and they're in that open spot,
my
and they really have
doubled
kind of
since last week. Sorry, continue.
When they had him stuck there, and he's, you know, he does that jump off the edge after the Pike Syndicate guy says that he's Tyrannus, and they figure it out. And then Obi-Wan turns to Anakin, and he's like, I'll throw you. That classic teamwork of those two Jedi, that was such an awesome rush to watch. I mean, mockery aside, it was epic.
You know, like, and in the next episode, Voices, again, okay, so the writers of these episodes, Christian Taylor, and he wrote these whole things, and he wrote the Mortis trilogy, and we've had our criticisms of the Mortis trilogy, I think each of us, in some ways, but there were echoes of the best parts of that series. And I think a lot of what just bothered me about Mortis, I really liked it, but what I had a hard time reconciling was the father's perspective on the Force. Because at the time, I kind of felt like, since this was like George making the statement that, you know, the father was saying that there must be a balance between good and evil. What I heard, and I want to plug it right here, is I was just listening earlier today to this past week, so I guess the week of, it would have been released on the 21st of March, I think, or 20th of March, Rebel Force Radio, they interview Dave Filoni, and he actually specifically mentions that there was a scene that they had to cut, but where the Shakespeare faces, as we're going to call them, specifically reference the father in the Mortis trilogy, and they say his view of the Force was very narrow, and he didn't have a full understanding of it. I thought, you know, that's pretty, and that makes Mortis actually like suddenly tons better and more appealing to me as a Star Wars fan, and I like the fact that they're kind of these
gives it an heir to the Empire feel, you know, and he's got the George Sabath kind of feel.
Well, and like in general, and we'll get back to the episode in a second, but it's like on a brief general aside, I thought it was interesting how the Clone Wars has, in ways that haven't, you know, it's happened in the expanded universe, but certainly not on our smaller big screens, has shown us different interpretations of the Force, whether it's the Night Sisters or whether it's Darth Maul's, you know, dark descent into madness, or whether it's
your magic's just an illusion.
Yeah, or whether it's these episodes where we see, you know, Yoda being confronted by, you know, Qui-Gon from beyond the grave.
Another,
you know,
thing that struck
really
me,
because cool
last night I was watching The Lawless, Obi-Wan knows that Maul's alive and all this stuff still, and yet Sidious takes him away right out from underneath Obi-Wan's nose. I mean, you know, we talk about the Clone Wars Knox comics, you know, off to the side, and Obsession was one of them, where people were like, okay, well, how can that still exist? And in that, Obi-Wan was obsessed with bringing Asajj Ventress back to the light, you know, and kind of redeeming her character. And you could see something similar in a different light now, where Obi-Wan becomes obsessed with hunting down Maul and figuring out what happens. I mean, I know the comic's going to be coming out next month or the month after that. I think it comes out in May, where they're going to wrap up that story arc. So I'm very curious as to what they do, because last Obi-Wan knew, Maul was on Mandalore, and then all of a sudden he's gone. So, you know, having it on Netflix is awesome. I mean, if you do not have Netflix, just to have the ability to watch this show alone is worth the price you're going to pay.
Well,
and there's so many other great shows out there.
It's worth the free 30-day trial. I mean, seriously, that's without a doubt. And I do feel bad, because, like, unless you're outside of the U.S. and Canada, but, you know, oh well, copyright's dumb, if you ask me. Heard it here, not first. But yeah, so Yoda officially in Voices is deeply unsettled, and he is brought not by like the voice. I thought it was interesting the wording they used. What was the exact wording? It's like your voice not from within. You know, it's not from within, and you know, the idea that the Jedi Council begins to worry that Yoda is going to be corrupted by the dark side. You know, it's interesting. Like,
or age. I mean, that was the other thing. Mace is like, you are the oldest, most wisest Jedi here. Do you think you're susceptible? And I mean, even Yoda's like, to the dark side, anything is possible. I mean, and that's another thing about the Lost Ones. I mean, when they finally figured out, and the chip too. I mean, when they figured all that stuff out, they're like, well, we got to bury it. And Mace asks Yoda, you know, is that the right move? And Yoda's like, right move, no. Only move, yes. You're just like, dude, you guys are so hosed.
Well, and that's the point of it. Exactly. Like, even, well, first of all, it just goes to show again, like, the Jedi Council doesn't trust anybody. Even Yoda, they're like,
no, there is a big chunk of that right now, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, good grief. Yeah. But, like, and then, but so then I want to jump quickly to the next episode, where you have Qui-Gon Jinn is essentially becoming a guiding light for Yoda when he orders him to go to Dagobah. And that's what, wow, that was really cool. And then
one of the things he tells him is, you're going to be needed later as a guide. And I was like, ding, 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 ding. Whoa, wait, what? Say what? Because I've always been wondering, how come Yoda never came back in the EU as a Force ghost? And I'm just thinking, episode 7, baby, episode 7, Force ghost think. Yoda.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I guess you see him in Return of the Jedi. Is there no instance of Yoda in the Expanded Universe Force Ghost?
No, just in Return of the Jedi. Yoda just disappeared and had no reason to come back. And now this gives him a reason. It's like, okay, well, then what were you training for? I mean, and especially, like, okay, if that episode takes place, say, you know, a few weeks before episode 3, I get it. But if it takes a few months still before episode 3, why didn't you tell anyone else? I mean, you're living in a dark time. You're afraid the Jedi Order is like on the verge of collapse. Don't you think that's a technique you might want to be teaching some Jedi just in case? It's like a worst case scenario may come forward. And that was always something that bothered me about Qui-Gon. It was like, if Qui-Gon learned this technique while alive, why the heck did he sit on it? I truly think that those spirit people came to him after he died. I mean, it's been referenced in the biography books that that's what Obi-Wan and Yoda do to Anakin. Upon death, Anakin was going to the netherworld, and their spirits reached out and grabbed him and said, Anakin, you have this one chance. You know, you need to come with us and forgive yourself, or you're going to be lost forever in darkness. And they were able to save him. And I think the similar thing is what those spirit things did to Qui-Gon. But because they did it after he died, his physical shell was already gone. You know, because I've always been under the belief that the wills kind of existed in the Force, and the way those spirit guide things were, I mean, they were, you know, little dots 1 minute, then they became people, and each one represented a different emotion.
The only thing that they officially call them is priestesses, and the essential thing is that, and they say it explicitly, which is what's so nice, is that Yoda's goal is unlocking the key to immortality, and that's something that light side, in the mythology of Star Wars, that's always been something that only light side, that only light side users have been able to do, which is kind of the ultimate irony, because Anakin Skywalker goes to the dark side to try to unlock that secret. It's kind of sad, but
that's where the EU side of things tints it a little bit, because the Sith have always managed to find ways to get around it, but have never been successful at keeping it. I mean, that's what Palpatine was trying to do as well. I mean, there have been references of Sith that had only heads. I mean, you've seen Darth Maul able to stay alive after what he had. Yeah. So, but there's always been limits. I mean, when you get to Legacy of the Force, or not Legacy of the Force, but Legacy, the comic series with Cade Skywalker, he was using dark side abilities to be able to resurrect and use Shatterpoint in a new way that was able to give him that ability to bring people back from death. But the reason why he didn't succumb was because he didn't want the power. You know, he was able to use it, and he did skirt on the dark side as well, but because he didn't crave the power, there was no temptation. Every time he was tempted, those certain types of force temptations, he was able to put them aside. When it came to temptations of the passions, he wasn't so lucky. But
well, and if you want to talk about temptations, like the greatest moment of this episode of Destiny, which is the second to last episode, I thought was when Yoda confronts the dark side version of himself. I really enjoyed how he thought the key to defeating the dark side version was to just reject him and say, you're not part of me, and I reject you. And of course, that didn't work at all. What he had to do is admit his own dark tendencies.
The things that Dark One said, too, you know, Yoda doesn't play with us anymore. I mean, it's like, to admit that you used to dabble with the dark side a little more when you were younger. I mean, the things that he was saying and at the end that Yoda had to admit that they were true. Yeah. Profound impact on that character. I was like, oh,
yeah. And then only when when he's able to have that admission, that's when he's able to kind of vanquish his dark version. And you know, thus kind of purifying himself, I guess. And it is kind of a rite of purification almost, or sanctification. It, like if you wanted to use Catholicism as a parallel, it's interesting how there is this kind of,
it's a spiritual evolution.
Well, and one that's very similar to Luke, because Luke, you know, he thinks he's ready, but he's not an empire, and he has to further be able to let go And
it's like being the son of a mobster who was a son of a mobster who was the grandson of a line of mobsters, and realizing, I'm going to be a mobster. And then your friends are like, well, not if you realize that and change something about yourself right now.
Sure.
And that's kind of what he did. It was like, he recognized what it was, and by doing that, it lost its power over him. And he was able to move forward.
Yeah. But like that series of trials where first he sees that, then of course seeing like the AU, the alternative universe where the Clone Wars never takes place, and where you reject reality and reject evil totally, you just kind of you ignore it, essentially, just ignoring it and pretending everything's okay, which is kind of like what the Jedi Council has been most guilty of these past years, just kind of rejecting not the evil in front of them, but being so focused and distracted by that they lost sight of the greater evil that's pulling, the puppet master who's pulling all the strings. And so that was very compelling. And then also, of course, that final one, with the final moment at the end of the episode that I wanted to highlight real quick, when Yoda wakes up and asks to see the true face of the priestess, and one of them removes the mask, and then immediately they disappear and the cloth floats to the ground. It's like this very familiar imagery, and they reveal, of course, that the priestesses only exist as part of the living force. And that was, that kind of explains Qui-Gon, and it explains so much about, this is a lot of what I was
Did you like how Yoda said, "Did I die?" And she's like, "Of a sort."
Kind of. A little bit. Bit. And of course they save the final test for last. Your final test will be on Moriband.
Yeah, Moriband. And I'm okay with overlooking what they're talking about, because I think it's an interpretation thing. Aurora Singh shows up briefly in the Clone Wars, and we didn't see her use the Force. Okay, that's fine. In the Clone Wars, she never used the Force. That didn't mean that she was no longer a Force user in the EU, as her backstory was. And in this case, it's like, so this is the homeworld of the Sith. But what I kind of gathered was this was the homeworld of Bane's Sith. I couldn't see Bane wanting to be interned in the place where, these people had really little to do with me genetically, and I cast their order aside and built a new one. Why would I want to be interned with them, kind of thing? Well, so I kind of saw Moriband, like, it could have easily been in the same system.
And let me just interject real quick, just on an out-of-universe perspective. Also, this was in the Dave Filoni interview with Rebel Force Radio, where he does mention that, it's one of those things where it was going to be Korriban, and they produced it as Korriban. It looks like Korriban, smells like Korriban, it's Korriban, basically, because they changed the name last minute. In fact, I think they had to re-record dialogue because it was just one of those kind of weird, something that George, he's known to do it, where he just kind of, it's too similar to Coruscant. And so, because it sounded, Korriban sounds similar to Coruscant, he just decided to have a name change, which, whatever. I mean...
And that's fine, because you've already had Korriban, you had Zyost, you had Dormund Kai or something like that.
Sure.
There's been a bunch of different ones. I mean, the Sith as a species have jumped around from place to place. Take, in fact, the Dawn of the Jedi comic when, you've got the Tho'yors that were coming around picking people up and stuff. I mean, who's to say what planet these Sith thought they were, came from? I mean, that to me isn't really a problem. What I loved, though, about the way that it worked was Sidious knew he was going there, and he knew that they had a short, brief window of opportunity to take Yoda out. And he called Dooku down, and they meet in the works down on Coruscant, and they start doing this like little ritual, and Sidious is doing all this Sith words and stuff and casting like this really cool dark side magic spell. And they're able to kind of like peek in and twist Yoda's vision that he goes into when he goes down to the place. And oh man. And then all of a sudden he's on Coruscant, and they're almost there, and he's trying to find the identity of the Sith Lord. Well, that's because they're using the connection through Dooku that the Jedi originally thought was being used. So it was like, oh, what a perfect twist. Like, now they are using that connection. I just thought it was brilliant. I mean, there were some little things about there that kind of were like, well, okay, well, why would you change, why would you change the name last minute? But again, I've already reasoned that away. I don't see Bane as wanting to put his stuff right there with the rest of those Sith. I mean, that wasn't what his Sith were about. They were about mystery and disappearing. And so, of course, Sidious would know where this planet was. He's part of that rule of two. I mean, so for me, that worked. And the way that they did that whole playoff of, you know, Yoda's falling down and chasing the spirit. I mean, just to see Yoda and Anakin go up against Dooku and of course, you know, fate played out the way it did. That was crazy.
Well, what was great is like
when they both fall and Yoda's like about to pull the mask open and then it's all fabric. I was like, oh, sweet.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, good grief. Because, and you're like, oh, he's going to find it. And then you realize it's a vision. And that's how it ends. I mean, in fact, like that moment where Anakin kills Count Dooku in the vision in the exact same way that he would eventually kill him on the Invisible Hand in Revenge of the Sith. You know, very, very powerful imagery that really just connects back to the source material so well.
Well, I tell you this, I am very curious in the next 10 years, those kids that grew up watching this stuff in chronological order. You know, I grew up watching 1, 2, 3, then the clone, you know, or 1, 2, then the Clone Wars, then Episode 3, and then I watched Rebels. And, you know, I mean, it's going to end up happening. I mean, I've always been curious about your insights because of how you ended up watching this stuff. You know, I mean, it definitely shapes the way we perceive the universe and what we each, you know, take in as that was what happened. You know, I mean, we talk about canon and stuff, but at the end of the day, it's really what each fan kind of thinks happened. I mean, whether you're right or wrong, I mean, you're coming away with an enjoyment from your impressions of it, and how you watch it definitely, you know, how you consume the product definitely shapes that. I mean, whether you play the games and, you know, immerse yourself into characters like Starkiller or things like that. You know, I mean, all of it adds to the fandom and it creates these great, wonderful points of view. I mean, that's the one thing I love about our show is just embracing that.
Absolutely. You know what, Mark? I think that's going to be it. I don't have, I would sit here and talk to you for the next hour and a half. I kid you not. But sadly, tragically, I might add, I have homework to do. No, seriously. Like, if it weren't for this darn homework, I'm like a villain in a kid's cartoon. If it weren't for these darn homework assignments, I'll get you next time, podcast. No, in all seriousness, let's cue the nightclub band. Hello, Zero. That's going to end this episode of the Star Wars Report, the special release for you guys who tuned in from our mailing list. We really appreciate you guys. You guys are like the hardcore, super awesome Star Wars Report listeners, fans, community members. And usually I've got a billion things to plug, but you guys, if you guys are listening to this from the mailing list, you guys know it all. You're in the right place, and I really appreciate what you guys have done. Hey, Mark, anything you want to plug, anything you want to talk about non-Clone Wars related, or any final thoughts you want to give the people before we say our goodbyes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one thing you want to think about, if you're able to get Netflix, not only do you get good shows like The Clone Wars, but there's also The Walking Dead, there's Firefly, Serenity,
Battlestar Galactica. Firefly, by the way.
You got there, huh? What'd you think?
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so I told you. And the ORAM ship managed to just get almost totaled. I mean, that was the most gut-wrenching,
Firefly and Serenity just finished it last night as we record this. We'll do maybe we'll do another bonus thing for you guys who are interested and put that out to the mailing list, a whole little, like, Firefly discussion. That'd be fun to do sometime.
That would. It would be short, too.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well then. I think I've prattled on long enough. Hey, if you're listening to this and you're not following me on Twitter, it's at TheRileyGuy. Mark is at IllogicalRogue2. You guys know all the other links. It's been fun. I would just say, remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. And hey, I was thinking about it. We found out about Yoda and Qui-Gon Jinn in the Clone Wars. It's freaking amazing. All right, guys, we'll talk to you later. That does it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. May the Force be with you. Always. Time to play around with the Clone Wars song. soundtrack in some time. Man. There it is.